Whoever you are, wherever you are, and whenever it is, you're catching some brain waves. Coming to you from the banks of the synchronous and asynchronous St. Vrain River and almost always sunny Longmont, Colorado, I'm Ben Kalb, and for the first time in 57 episodes, the co-host across the table from me is not Becky Peters. Becky thought, hey, 2020 doesn't have enough changes yet, so I'll throw one more into the mix. Becky decided to take some time this year, and she is home with her family. We aren't quite sure what the future holds for Becky, but I think if you've been a longtime listener of this show, you would not be surprised if she is the next Secretary of Education. When I think of Becky, I can't help but think of the quote, "It takes a village." And when I think about replacing Becky on this show, which will never be able to replace her, it really is going to take a village. And so we have a whole committee, and I couldn't think of a better first co-host to kick this off than the one we have right next to us. So Temple Hales is in the house. Temple, what's good? Who are you?
Hi, y'all. It's so good to be here. My name is Temple Hales, and I am originally from Alabama, in case you didn't pick up on the y'all. And I've been here in St. Vrain for 14 years, started out as a first grade teacher and then second grade, and transitioned after 10 years in the classroom, transitioned to the Office of Professional Development, and now I am an instructional coordinator for our district, supporting teachers all across the district in grades K through 12. And I'm excited and happy and honored and humbled to be here.
Well, we're excited, happy, and honored. Never humble, though. Never humble. But we're so happy you're here, Temple. I first met you when a upper administrator in our district told me to go into your classroom and film you because you were the best teacher in that grade level. So big shoes to fill.
It's a
true statement right there. But you have so much advice, and I know our listeners are going to love learning from you. And let's start that off right now. Temple, what has the pandemic taught you?
It's teaching me, Ben. Yeah. It is still teaching me every day. I am learning how to be present, and I feel so many times that word is overused, but when I think about what it means to be present, it really goes into gaining clarity as to where we are. I am very much an achiever, and I have a tendency to either be thinking ahead and planning ahead or reflecting on the past and wondering how that's going to impact the future. And so really taking the time to just be present in the moment so that I can prepare for the future, as well as be intentional with that time that I want to just play in the present moment. So I know it seems contradictory in that I would be preparing while I'm present, but it's taught me that I need to do that. And I can do that in ways through running, through meditation, through prayer, through just even socializing with friends. All of those moments provide me the opportunity to be present. So being present has been something that I'm continuing to work on and really developing that clarity so that I can focus on what's essential. It's so easy for me to get wrapped up in what I need to do or thinking that all things are important. And so really being able to filter out what's most important so that I can be so clear and yet so present in that moment that's existing right here that I'm in.
Those are fantastic. I think I learned a lot about being present, especially during that March shutdown. And I think I did a much better job of that with my family. I think one of my biggest learnings in all these years in education, I knew teachers mattered to the kids in front of them, but I don't think I understood the impact of a teacher on like the entire family until this shutdown and until I was like watching my kindergarten daughter do school from my kitchen table. And it really helped me realize like how important the teacher is to an entire family, not just to the kid who's in that class. So that was definitely a shift. My daughter's kindergarten teacher made her like a 45 second like selfie style video. Just said, "Here's why I love being your teacher this year. This is why I think you're special." And I probably watched it like 25 times, and it just has meant the world to me. So I think one of my big takeaways from the pandemic is just the teacher matters way more than just to the students. They matter to the whole family unit. They matter to the community, and they're pretty special people.
Yeah. The impact of the teacher goes well beyond the walls in the classroom totally. And the students, doesn't it?
Yep, 100%. So who do we have on the show today?
Dr. Katie Martin joined us today. What a great interview that was.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Katie Martin, second ever multi-time guest author of Learner Center Innovation. And in this episode, we talk about the four P's of the pandemic. and how you can be a phenomenal teacher, whether you are synchronous, asynchronous, hybrid, in person, whatever you are. So without further ado, here she is.
I am Katie Martin. I work as the VP of Leadership and Learning at Altitude Learning. I am mom of two kids who are learning remotely in my house, which is fascinating. And my husband's also a 10th grade chemistry teacher, which I get to see him teach and learn also. And so learning a lot every day. And I'm also a former middle school teacher, literacy coach, and still one of my favorite jobs in the world.
And where are you based out of?
Good question. I'm in San Diego, California.
What's school look like in California right now?
Across the state, it's pretty varied. But for my family, we are completely remote. So we have breakfast together as a family, and everybody goes to their rooms to do school. I just walked upstairs and saw my daughter. She has a like testing sign on her door. So she says, "Not enter." She's testing.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
And Katie, what ages are your kids again?
They are in fifth and sixth grade. So my son's finishing up elementary school and my daughter started middle school completely remote. And so new school, new teachers, new dynamics, but all from afar.
How did that transition go for her moving from fifth to sixth grade?
It's been, I don't want to say challenge because, you know, she doesn't know anything different, but this is not what she imagined, right? So we're going through the highs and lows of this is not how I imagined ending elementary school, you know, with a drive-by parade and starting middle school, not getting to meet my teachers or new friends and having, you know, middle school can present a lot of challenges with kids, but you also don't have the connection and the opportunity to meet people. Breakout rooms have been good and the teachers are really trying to connect the kids, but it's a very different dynamic when they don't know each other. And so she's trying to stay positive, but missing out on a lot of the normal things that she expected to happen.
Yeah. I've been seeing some of the same things. My daughter is a kindergartner this year. And so some of those kind of expectations that we set on ourselves of what we think it's going to look like and then how it actually is, it's interesting to navigate.
Man, yes, you mentioned just that disconnect between what we expect and then what is reality now. So what would your advice be to, what are you telling your daughter about? Like, hey, I know that's not how you wanted elementary school to end, but that's our reality. What's your advice to kids and to teachers who are facing that?
You know, it's advice to myself too, right?
Yeah,
like, well, this isn't normal. This isn't, you know, we're not going to try and pretend that this is normal. We are going to learn. We are going to make the best of it. We are going to let it be okay when we're upset, right? We're going to be able to, big fan of Mark Brackett, like permission to feel that when this doesn't feel good and when it's yucky, we're just going to acknowledge it. But our goal in this family, and my hope for like educators in general, is to figure out how to make it through developing new skills, new connections, and new ways of being that can help us when we get through the pandemic and we have, and we are able to be back together to make the best of it. And, you know, I get to spend a lot more time with her. This is a time when I thought my daughter was going to be kind of off and we would be more disconnected. And I have kind of a free year, I feel like, to spend more time with my sixth grader, to connect with her. I'm traveling less. We're all together more. And so I'm trying to take advantage of those times. And the other thing is they're getting out and bike riding a lot. Mm. So our schedules were very strict in a lot of ways, school, soccer practice, lots of other things, you know, family engagements. And we have a lot more flexibility in our time. So the kids are learning to ride bikes and they go out and explore. They take trips to the store and things that they probably wouldn't have done if we were not experiencing the pandemic right now. Trying to focus a lot on the silver linings while still letting it be okay to be sad.
With that, I'm wondering too, what advice would you have for teachers as to what to focus on? You've talked about like as a family, what's helped you to focus. I'm thinking about as teachers, like what do we hold on to and what do we let go of?
So much. We let go of a lot. That is kind of, I just wrote a blog the other day, and because what's really resonating when I'm talking to people is I think we're trying to fit so much in. Right? We're trying to get back to, well, we have to do school and we have to get through all of this. So we're still doing the same, you know, same worksheets, the same assignments, the same math curriculum. And I'm not saying the skills aren't important. They are. But there's a lot of problems and things in the world to explore. And so what I would like to do more of is be present in the moment and help kids understand the world they're living in. There's, you know, great science lessons in the spread of disease and in illness and exponential growth, right? There's a lot of things to learn about racial injustice and how we see things from, you know, our bias and implicit or explicit and how we come to the world. A lot of lessons to learn and a lot of things to talk about. Politics. I just think there's a lot of things happening in the world that our kids are experiencing. They're not, you know, because of adults talking about these things. And there's opportunities to have better conversations with our learners about the world and about their own experiences. And so I would love to see more of that. I would like to see less of a lot of just worksheets and assignments and, you know, those things that we kind of are used to doing in school. And my son calls it trash can work. So it's it always resonates. He says, "Mom, it's just trash can work. I'm going to turn it in and it's just going to get thrown away. Why does it even matter?" And then the same, I was just talking to some teachers and they were realizing I'm assigning so much work. And all it is putting more work back on me as a teacher to like grade all of this. And the kids aren't really getting the feedback. It's just this transactional approach to you do the work, I mark it off, I check it in the grade book, and we move on. And we're missing out on the learning, the conversation. And frankly, people are stressed out beyond belief and doing this to themselves. So back to the pandemic, I'm thinking people are beyond stressed, beyond overwhelmed. And at this point in time, we should be really thinking about our social, emotional well-being, our health. We should be thinking about understanding the broader world and maybe just pausing a little bit on checking off all the boxes that used to be school and prioritizing on those things a little bit more in our daily lives so that, you know, a year from now, when we go back to school, we're whole humans rather than wound up, stressed out people who, you know, aren't grounded.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that you had mentioned in that blog post that you're referring to was the power of self-assessment. And so I'm thinking about you're really trying to create opportunities and ways for the students to just take ownership more of that learning and the process of that learning. What might be some ideas as to ways that kids could self-assess?
Well, I think it has to start with teacher clarity of our goals. So again, instead of saying, here's the worksheet or here's the unit test that we're working on, fill in the answers and move on. If we kind of back up a little bit and try and figure out what are the like learning goals that we're really going for? Is it that you know, it might be multiplication. It might be that you understand different points of view, depending on your subject or topic. So thinking about how do we really get clear on what our priorities are and then allow students to know this is what success looks like. And if you know what success looks like, then you can assess your work in relationship to that. But when we skip those first two steps and just assign tasks, then what are students self-assessing on? Mm-hmm. Right? They're like, I finished it. I got 90% or I didn't. So I think it has to be a relevant and meaningful task that has clear success criteria so that people can self-assess. And when teachers give feedback, it's meaningful and relevant based on the goals.
Mm-hmm.
So the topic of one of the times I saw you speak, and then I think the TED Talk on your website as well, is that teachers create what they experience. And we are obviously in the midst of a time when we're all making something we've never experienced. So what do you see as the fallout of that?
Yeah, I think we're creating learning experiences kind of only from our imagination in isolation, right? So if I'm trying to create this online class, what makes sense is I take exactly what I did in school and try to transfer it to an online or remote practice or a hybrid or whatever your situation is. And the danger in that is they're different, right? There are practices that transfer and there's relationships and connections and strategies that transfer, but how they appear in a digital environment as opposed to the classroom vary. And so one of those things is learning, you know, you have to be really clear. And again, this goes back to a conversation I just had with a teacher this morning, that I think I'm clear and I say, okay, you know, go and do this assignment and, you know, go do this math problem and come back. And students are like, but I don't have a friend to look at. I'm not in the classroom and I can't see the context. I don't exactly know what it is. And so we spend a lot of time kind of going in circles instead of like, on the digital platform, what is the learning target? What does success look like? What's the explicit thing I want you to do? That explicitness and that clarity can be, faked is not the right word, but can be like overlooked in the classroom because you have proximity. And we miss that when we go to a virtual environment. And so when teachers don't see what that looks like or experience how to design their lessons for online, we get a lot of chaos and confusion. And so I'm advocating for people to start collaborating more, for teachers to observe other teachers, not for evaluation, but just like join another class, see how someone else is doing it. This is the time to open up our classrooms so much more rather than like shrink and do it in isolation. We have opportunities to visit teachers all across the world right now with a click of a button and see what they're doing. And I think we should be doing that more just to continue to learn and create new experiences for ourselves so that we can create those better opportunities for our students.
So Katie, I have a follow-up question regarding collaboration, especially in the elementary world. It's kind of designed so that teachers have a shared plan time. Well, with some of the new structures that are in place with hybrid right now, that shared plan time has been taken away. Teachers still get their plan time, but they're at different times. What might be some other opportunities for us to think outside of the box, but yet still collaborate so we can build off of the power of one another's learnings?
So lots of ideas, and it may or may not fit exactly in your structure, but I think the opportunity here, instead of, like you said, going away from the plan time, what if you had four or five teachers that were responsible for a group of students? So right now you have each teacher, a lot of times in elementary school, really responsible for every subject and all of their 30 kids. Instead of saying, what if we looked at our time blocks differently and leverage different teacher strengths? So if you have a group of five teachers, one of them might be really good on the digital aspect, and they might be really good at organizing all of the lessons and all of the things online in the virtual space or LMS, whatever it is. And another might be really good at that one-on-one check-in and feedback. Another might be really good at small groups. So thinking about how you could leverage strengths of each other and collaborate to build that experience for all of your students. There's a team that I worked with, and they were this math group. All of them are collaborating together for all of their high school math students. So they're like recording lessons and sharing them across their 100 kids instead of just the 25 that they were assigned to. And I think that's a really interesting way to think about how we, one, make this manageable for everyone, two, learn from each other, and then give kids the best, right? This is not the way that a lot of teachers are like creating all of these videos for their students and all of the lessons is just not sustainable. And it's actually, they're not getting the best because teachers aren't often at their best this way. And so I think that just reconfiguring what we think about the day and how we break it up is really something we should be thinking more about.
Man, and what you had said about we can visit classrooms at the click of a button around the world. Like I remember when pineapple charts, you know, first became popular and you hung a QR code on your door. How cool would it be on Twitter if you posted, hey, I'm about to teach a session here and do breakout rooms. I'd love to have some other teachers pop in and give me feedback. That would be incredible. You should use your platform to start organizing that because you have like 100,000 followers. You have all the followers. So make it happen.
I think it's such a good idea though. And I just want to say like, can I come observe, right? I feel like I've been looking at Twitter and seeing all these different examples from teachers. And that's how I'm learning a lot of things too, because I mean, there's a lot that I don't know and there's a lot of things that I need to learn. And so it would be so great to open our virtual classrooms and just be able to connect. Like you said, like, let's get feedback. Like I'm trying this. I don't know how it's going to work. Can someone please give me another set of eyes? Or like, let's collaborate and try this lesson in a few different classrooms and contexts and see what works. There's a lot of different ways to do that. The other thing I would love to see, not that you asked, but I want, is in terms of virtual collaboration or in person, speaking of like those problems that we were talking about, all the different challenges in our world, like what if we could spend time thinking about what's the problem that we want to solve? And you can have kids, you know, in St. Vrain and kids in San Diego and kids in Pennsylvania, collectively thinking about, you know, problems that they see. There's such an opportunity to connect not only our teachers, but our students on things that really matter when the walls of school don't exist as they have for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It keeps it authentic. The problem solving as to what's really happening right now.
Totally. And, you know, and then you could learn like, oh my gosh, what does this look like in, you know, the East Coast? What does this look like on the West Coast? There's just like so many ways to learn and to be connected because the collaboration doesn't have to be in person. You know, and it isn't in person. So there's that opportunity to make use of this virtual space.
Yeah, I think what stands out in my mind too when you were offering the suggestion of kind of dividing and conquering is really building off of our strengths. And I think so many times we feel in the elementary world particularly that we have to be the master of all because we're teaching all of the content. And so now for me to be able to team up with my team and distinguish who's doing really well at what components and now how can we work together so that, like you said, everybody's getting the best, that just feels like a win-win for me and my students. And it helps to reduce that mental stress that is already there. And now it's just heightened with the pandemic.
Yeah. No, I think that that's such a great point. And I appreciate you saying that, you know, I feel like I have to know everything for my students. Well, like we can't, you can't know everything. It's impossible. And so that perception that is ingrained in many of us as educators, think about how it holds us back and holds our students back, right? Because now they're only getting what you know, right? And like, so there's the opportunity to think about how do I let them, you know, learn things and grow beyond what I know? How can I open this up and have them research and explore and connect with people so that they can learn and develop, you know, mindsets and skills that are beyond what you know and beyond your strengths, right? As you bring in other people. I also think it's a great opportunity to bring in families, yes. Right? You have dentists, you have firemen, you have entrepreneurs, you have people in your classrooms, you have teachers, you have frontline workers, you know, how could they come and be part of the classroom and jump in virtually and share or like mentor and coach students in different aspects too, based on their strengths and their interests. Sometimes we think of parent participation as like, can you grade this paper or can you be room mom? Instead of like, can you come and help teach some things and based on like your skills and strengths? That's another powerful way to like be connected and especially take advantage of the time right now where we can be more connected.
Hearing you say that makes me think of our blended collaborative that we have here in St. Vrain. And within that, one of the components that we really focus on are feedback loops. And a lot of times we talk about like student to student feedback or teacher to student. And with the onset of hybrid learning, one of the feedback loops that we're really playing around with now is student to community or student to parent. And so hearing you say that, I'm already trying to think of other ways and ideas as to where we could expand that feedback loop.
I love that idea. Yeah, there's just so many ways to think about, you know, how do we expand beyond the traditional, like there's the opportunity right now. And I know people are so overwhelmed, but to think about instead of moving school online, like it's always been, what are the things that we are now able to do differently because we don't have to follow the same structure that we always have. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's that opportunity when you say feedback loops, always also coming back to see, you know, what do students know? How can we show evidence of learning? This is another shift that I see is really necessary, like making it the teacher clarity is really important. But also instead of just, you know, seat time, I'm here. So I learned, I went to my hour math class, check, I can move on. Instead, do we have to be there for the hour math class? Can you show evidence of what you can do? What do you know? What's your next step? And how do we really allow for this personalization? Because we don't have to be all at the same place. And we have technology that it can afford students to move at their own pace, at their own time, but still hold kids accountable for the learning not just the seat time.
Man, I feel like I should pay you as a therapist because my attitude is like way different after talking to you. Hearing you talk has helped me switch into like, this could be exciting. Like a lot of our things that are holding us back are probably self-imposed pressure about giving out more trash can work rather than, hey, how can I tap into parents? How can I do all of these exciting new things? So thank you for helping me shift my mindset. How do we think administrators and how have you seen principals support teachers with like that freedom to think about things differently?
So I think I want to couch this in the idea of the, like you said, strengths-based culture, right? Like making sure it sounds like building on strengths of the teachers. I think that we also need to have that mindset when we think about students. So there's a lot of talk about, and this is from administrators, Ben, like a lot of talk about like our students are behind. We need to accelerate. We need to make sure that we close the gaps from what they missed in March and make sure that they're caught up. And I think that pressure is what teachers are feeling like, oh my gosh, I have to catch everyone up. So a few things I want to just like note on that. In many schools across the country, from March until June, or whenever your testing season is, it's testing season. There's a lot of testing. There's a lot of retesting. There's a lot of practice for the test. And then there's a break and a pause and prepare for the end of school. So like, if you think about how much kids missed actually being in school, there's usually not a ton of content being taught through that time. And you're laughing, right?
Yeah, totally. Like, yes. That is so true.
When we're, you know, if you're spending a month testing, there's not a lot of content that kids were missing. So that's just one point. And also, everybody has always been at different places, right? Like, and so we just, I would really love to think of the mindset of we are where we are. They're kids. So let's meet kids where they are. Let's understand where they are. Let's understand them as whole people, not just their math and reading test scores, but let's understand what it is they're learning, what skills they've developed through this pandemic, how they've shown resilience, how they've been able to persevere, like where is their emotional intelligence and how have they had greater flexibility in their thinking. So there's just seeing them as whole people and then being able to say, here's where you are, let's move you forward, instead of this notion that like there's a gap we need to fill from, you know, March to September. And so I think what administrators can do is, one, listen to the teachers. For the love of good, teachers know their kids, right? You know your students, you know where they are, you know what they need. And it really starts with asking teachers, like, how can I help? How can I support? Instead of, did you do this, this, and this? And then giving permission. So this is a friend of mine. I wrote about it in the book, but a friend of mine, Caleb Rashad, says three P's: permission to do something new. You have to explicitly give permission to not follow step by step. And I think, Ben, that's what you said. The teachers feel this pressure to have to, you know, this self-imposed pressure. And instead, if you see opportunities to do things differently, they need to have permission from the administration to try or to say, come and talk to me if you have an idea. And then it's like the removal of these policies that don't make any sense. So if you're like, you need to be on, you know, follow the pacing guide and the benchmark. Come on. If we're still following pacing guides and benchmarks in the middle of a pandemic, like let's check in on that and just think about why. And then it's protection. So it's the protection of, if you make a mistake and this doesn't go perfectly, I'm here to support you and talk through it. I'm not here to like, you know, mark you off and write you up, but things aren't going to go perfectly. We are in a pandemic. We are transferring things online and technology doesn't work. It's clunky. So we just need that protection from what we think is, you know, making mistakes. And then the fourth one I would add to that is perfection. This perfection plagues educators, like, and it really inhibits progress. And so thinking about us as educators and administrators, creating that space where people are sharing failures, they're talking about how to improve, they're getting feedback, they're opening classroom doors. All of those things need to be celebrated by the administrators and in order to create that culture. And I think one way to do it that I really like to start meetings or collaborations with is, what are we learning? What's going well? Let's talk about it and create that space for teachers to share things, but then also be able to share, once you celebrate what's working, here's some things that I need help with. and creating that space to have that conversation. Because any administrator right now, you might not like me for saying this, who is telling teachers how to teach and pretending like they know what to do is sadly mistaken. They haven't taught through a pandemic. You have to ask. You have to ask families. You have to ask teachers. You have to be checking in, and you have to be open to feedback, because no one has got this nailed down. And if you think you do, then you need to check yourself a little bit, because we just need each other more than ever.
Yeah, that's exactly what Ben and I were talking about. We were talking about how this is just uncharted territory for us all, and we're all doing the very best we can. And if we don't give ourselves that permission to do our best, but then to pivot and to change and to try something else. Yeah. I love the idea of letting go of perfectionism and permission.
Totally.
You know, we need to give it to ourselves, and then we need to know that we have it.
I'm going to make you a graphic, the 4 P's of the pandy, and it's going to go viral. It's going to be amazing. That's so
cool. And you know, we're asking our kids to just pivot also. We're asking them to learn and to be vulnerable and to try new things. And we have to be explicit about that too. And we have to be open. And my son's teacher said to me, you know, give me feedback. Do you have other ideas how I can do this? And I just love that orientation, instead of being like, oh no, I didn't do it right. Let's pretend, or, you know, beat myself up. You know, there's teachers working all hours of the night, creating these new lessons and these beautiful online classrooms, and they're still, and then it's not working. And, you know, not working as they think it should be perfect, and beating themselves up because they're not getting the results. And that's why I just think there's a lot that we could get rid of. We just strip the extra to really figure out what's the most important to do right now.
Going back to just focusing on what's essential and asking for help to figure out what that is, if we can't identify it. Because sometimes we're in the middle of something. It's so hard to identify what it is that's essential. But if we ask somebody else who's on the outside, hey, help us, what do I need to take off my plate? What do I need to keep on it? They can help us to identify that.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And, you know, for all of us, I just think day to day, like, are we trying to like keep up with this rat race? I just have this like image of the hamster wheel. Are we just like keeping up with the hamster wheel? Meanwhile, the whole world is changing and evolving. And so this is really the opportunity to shed some of those things that are not necessary.
We talked about how we could kind of make some mind shifts as teachers, what administrators could do. I'm curious now, I'm thinking about the students. And I'm curious now, what ideas do you have to help students feel connected? We are in a hybrid environment here in St. Vrain. And so they are in school certain days of the week and then at home. So what are some ways that we can help those students to feel emotionally and socially connected behind a mask and behind a screen, knowing that we've got cohorts that are A and B days? What are some of your ideas, Katie?
This is hard. I ask myself and my kids a lot when I see it working well. Like, my son's just about ready to start his like book club, but creating those times for kids to just like be together. So if it's breakout rooms, and, you know, allowing them, a lot of people are afraid of these breakout rooms because like, oh my gosh, what are the kids going to do without me? And I think that's part of like, we have to trust our kids too. We have to give them rules, expectations, meaningful work to do, and then let them talk. And let them get comfortable being uncomfortable and be their awkward selves, right? Like, you know, if they're in sixth grade, they might not talk all the time, but like letting them just be in those rooms together to form those connections that they usually do in the hallways and the playground when we're not around. That's the time when they do make those connections. And so I think we need to remove ourselves from all the spaces the kids are in all the time to give them that opportunity to do that. I used to do this because working remotely, same thing, you'd lack the connection. We used to have learning circles. And so it was like six people who were just together. And there was like a poem we would read, or an article that we would read, or something we would look at to discuss on a regular basis. And that just helped build that connection. Like, those were my people that I knew that I could connect with. And like, again, those meaningful projects, I think, would be a really powerful way to do it. Like, what is something you're interested in? Could we have just like carve out some time for a passion project that allows kids from, you know, it could be across the school, it could be across the district, across the world, but some ways where it's like, here's an hour a week where you guys get to pick a problem you're interested in solving and work on it. You know, Educators could do that too. That's a great professional development. Like, what are you interested in working on? You know, I feel like people are always way more invested and way more willing to connect when they're working on something that matters to them. And so, and then just kind of goal setting is also a really important piece right now. Like, what are your goals as an individual? How can you kind of work on them? Again, people have more free time, and helping kids set goals and track their progress and really see that they're doing something worthwhile. I think that's important for all of us right now.
That clarity, that idea of clarity has come up over and over and over again, just through our conversation, if you think about it, how important it is for us all, right?
Yeah. I mean, the world is spinning right now, and there's no certainty of like what comes next, nor has there ever been, but it felt before, right? Prior to March, it felt like we knew what was happening tomorrow. It was predictable. We could predict the future in a sense. And the pandemic has totally shifted that. We all now know that we don't know what tomorrow brings, and we can't predict it. We don't know what next month looks like in school, let alone next school year. And so having things that we can anchor on that provide us some like tangible moments of success, I think are important. Success, connection, and relevance and purpose. Those things are important for all of us right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, I keep going back to, these are like solid instructional practices that we're talking about that we're doing whether we're in a pandemic or not.
Yeah.
Goal setting, clarity, authentic, purpose, right? Student-centered, totally. All of these things that we're talking about, to me, they're just core instructional practices, which makes me feel good. I don't feel like I'm adding on all these new things that I'm having to do.
I think that, like, yes, you just nailed it. And, you know, it's like, it's this authentic learning anytime, anywhere. If we're really focused on learning, it doesn't exactly matter where it is. Our, you know, the strategies might shift a little bit, but those core practices really stay the same. Mm-hmm. And if we go back to what we know about learning, what we know about creating communities, those same things are still really, really relevant. What happens is we get stuck in school mode, right? So if you compare learning and school, those two things are opposite in many ways. The practices that we are so used to in school often really inhibit learning and, you know, and are at odds with authentic and meaningful work. But so if we're moving, you know, in the pandemic and we think about trying to transfer school practices, those are the things that become even more exaggerated that really inhibit learning and create more disconnection.
Mm-hmm. Katie, I'm thinking about, you made a reference in one of your articles about how you define hybrid learning. And then you use the analogy of a car, of a hybrid car, right? And you were talking about a hybrid car doesn't use both electricity and gas at the same time. Can you talk a little bit about how you see that in relation to hybrid learning?
Yeah, I can. So, you know, I have the great fortune of working with schools and educators around the country. And what you see in terms of what people name things are very different. And so this hybrid idea, as it was initially conceived in many ways, was some days you are in school with your teacher because you have, you know, 12 smaller classes and you were in that small learning community. It's synchronous. You're together. And those days when you're not, you are at home learning and it's an asynchronous. So there's the gas and the electricity. So you design those opportunities in connection for people when you're together for that community building and the small group instruction and all of that stuff and feedback. And then you design those personal learning paths for the at-home asynchronous time when you don't have a teacher present. The challenge that I've seen that is just absolutely draining people and not effective for learners either. And I know I'm going to get pushback on that, but like overwhelmingly, I'm generalizing. There are some teachers who are doing it really well, but overwhelmingly, this has not been an effective practice for teachers and learners. When you do the Zoom into class, right? So the teacher has to be present for kids in class, but also connect to kids online. And like we were saying, that clarity, what you're doing online is different than in the classroom. Although they're the same practices, the strategies and the way that you do it are very different. And so the teacher's forced to do double duty. And, you know, as a learner, you're watching your people learn. It is not super motivating or intrinsically like motivating experience to be watching people in the classroom learn. And you're like, I'm over here by myself. So yes, there are ways to make it better. And there's people who are doing the blended learning and small group instruction, which we should be doing no matter what. But the way I have seen that be way more effective is thinking about, like we were talking about, thinking about how to use your staff differently. So are there people who could be designing the online learning experiences for students and people who could be doing the in-person? How can you use your staff differently and reconfigure time instead of making one teacher do everything for one small group of kids? It's just, it's taking the role of the teacher and asking exponentially more and more of them in a time where they have their own families, their own chaos, their own lives that are hard and learning all these new things. It's not an ideal environment. And I think that we're going to be in this longer than most people want to recognize. And so the reason I bring this up is we have time to pivot, right? We have time to say, you know what? This wasn't right. Let's create a different way. Let's do a totally remote option. Let's think differently about how we organize our staff. My fear is that people say, oh, this is the model we chose. And so for the next year and a half, we're going to be doing this. Mm-hmm. And then we totally, you know, just drill the teachers and they lack, we're just going to ruin the passion and energy for teaching if we continue on with this method. The other thing I will say is, like, the people who are putting these policies in place, I've also been chatting with a lot of them. And man, the weight of the world mm-hmm. is on the administrators' shoulders right now. And they are also just hurting. They're, you know, stressed. They're in no-win situations. And so what I don't want to do is pit this, like, teacher against administrator yeah. against mm-hmm. parent. And I feel like there's too much of that blaming mm-hmm. and you don't care about me. Everyone I've talked to is just wants so badly to support teachers, to support students, to support families, and families care about the educators. So I think we need to just pause, just pause and come together and say, hey, guess what? We all underestimated how long we are going to be in this. Let's come back together. We've tried some things. What's worked? What hasn't? How can we reallocate our staff? How could we redesign our experiences so that people are really getting what they need at home and in person and able to live lives that are not 24/7 designing and redesigning lessons online? We have an opportunity to come out as more whole people who have paused and meditated and breathed and just, like, and focused on things that matter. This is an opportunity for, like, those small groups and more connection and more one-on-one feedback rather than trying to spread yourselves way too thin, which is just impossible. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, when we shifted to hybrid, how excited teachers were to be like, I have the kids, I have them here, I have them in person. Right. And so now not only do I have them in person, but in a lot of instances, I have a smaller class size mm-hmm. of kids in person. So, like you're saying, how do I capitalize on that opportunity and make those kids in front of me right there a priority? Not yeah. that the kids online aren't, but it's just going to look different. And how do we manage that?
Right.
Yeah.
Let's say, look, we tried this and some of it worked, but what are the things you want to do with students who are face to face? How can you maximize that time? And then based on those times, what can students do independently that is meaningful because they sat with their teacher in a small group, they set goals, they were really clear on those expectations. So when they go home, it's not busy work. Yep. It's meaningful practice based on where they are, what their goals are. I think we can absolutely close the gaps and accelerate learners if we focus on who they are as individuals. And we work on those personalized paths. Then we won't have these huge gaps and learning losses, but we have to really find out where students are and help them to get where we want them to be instead of just trying to, like, accelerate a whole school or a whole class curriculum with kids online and offline. That's not going to get us to where we want to be.
This is why you're our first episode back after 207 days off, bringing the fire.
I love it. It feels good.
The best, totally. All right, we'll let you run on this. Where can our listeners go to learn from and with you? And maybe you can talk about the organization that you're the vice president of now as well.
Yeah, altitudelearning.com. You can check out our partnerships, amazing schools and educators across the country, and some resources there. You can also go to my personal blog, which is katielmartin.com. And you can find me on all social at katiemartinedu.
Even TikTok?
I mean, also including that's like old people social.
Ah, okay, perfect. Twitter, I was like,
Facebook and Instagram.
If you were on TikTok, I was going to go on TikTok and make it rock. I don't even know what that means. But Katie Martin, you are the best. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, time to close up shop. Temple, what did you learn?
Wow. I think I was reminded of the importance of clarity when I think about all of the different aspects that we touched on when talking to Katie, whether it was the perspective of the student, the teacher, or the administrator, just the importance of clarity, of goal setting, knowing what I'm setting out to achieve and the purpose of that. I was just reminded again and again.
Yeah. What would your next step be if you were a teacher? What should some of the next steps be?
I think about collaboration and the power of collaboration. And Katie talked a lot about the importance, more now so than ever, of bringing our voices together and working together to make this incredibly difficult job feel a little bit more sustainable and invigorating. And so when I think about collaborating with my grade level team or my content level team, I think my next steps are to go back and kind of divide and conquer and establish for me, what are my strengths? What is it that I do really well? What do I bring to the table that's going to highlight not only the work that I do, but the work that my students do? And then where is it that my teammates succeed? And how can we each capitalize on our strengths to provide only the best to our students?
Yeah, that's fantastic. That really stuck out to me as well. I think my takeaway, if I was a teacher listening, really was around those four P's that she... Was it four P's, three P's?
She started with three and then went to four.
But then she talked about pivoting, which is a P, and pandemic, which is a P. There's a lot of P's.
Permission.
Yep, totally. So the P that stood out to me definitely was that P of permission and knowing. I think I'm probably more of a rule breaker. Did you know that about me?
I'm learning it.
And so I didn't need to ask permission a lot, but I think there's a lot more permission out there than we tend to naturally see. So if you are a teacher listening and you have an awesome idea about how things should be, go ask for that permission. I think the answer to that question is probably yes, a lot more than we care to admit. So permission, pivoting, mm-hmm. pandemic.
Yes.
Brainwaves. So this is the part of the show, Temple, where you have to tell everyone to have a great generic time of day.
Have a great generic time of day. Like that?
Yes. I was giddy up. You just crushed it.